Is that good? I genuinely can't tell if that's good.
G'day, what's up? It's Aiden Jones here. You're listening to Sitting Under a Tree for Tuesday, the 16th of April, 2024. How the shitting feck are you? I am at my cousin's house in Bendigo and really just having a lovely time the last few days. It's been a very busy week. I've done heaps of shit. I'm going to tell you about it. I think I started this podcast too quickly because I didn't really give myself any kind of plan for what I was going to say. I've been away since, I'm looking at my shit here, Thursday I left, didn't I? And let me just check in with myself. Wait, I need to have a sip of my tea. I need to center myself in this room. Do you know where I am actually? I'm in the spare room, I'm in the kind of like playroom at my cousin's house because my friends are here as well. So they've taken the spare room with the bed. So I'm in like the kids' kind of lounge room area. And in this room, there is, I'm sitting on a couch with like a TV and a PlayStation and like a, no, it's an Xbox and Nintendo and shit. And then in the corner of the room, there's like this massive dollhouse and a baby's pram and a play kitchen area and like a bunch of like a bunch of kids' books and stuff. Really is a completely different life that you live when you have kids, hey? We were just talking at the kitchen table before. So nice to introduce my friends to my cousin and his family. And we were talking about, well, my friends are British, and we were talking about the, you know, the different times that, fuck, I can't even think. Oh my God. We were talking about the different times that the sunrise and sunset is in summer in the UK versus Australia. And I can't remember. One of the guys said sometimes in summer in the UK, the sun will rise at like 3:55, you know, and sometimes you'll be coming home from a night out and you'll see the sunrise and it's so stressful or whatever. And in my head, I was just like, my cousin and his wife have not had a night out in 10 years. Like, I just was like, this is a very, these guys are not living the same life as that, you know. It's funny, man. I love just coming here and seeing the kids, the old skits. Bought them some chocolates and some cookies and stuff. Man, we've had a tremendous trip. You know where we were today? We were in Glen Rowan when Ned Kelly was murdered by the arm of the state, the dude at the Ned Kelly Museum. We stopped, so we drove, let me rewind. I went to Sydney, I flew into Sydney and was hanging out with a friend and we then met up with Milo, my man Milo Edwards, who we're doing this tour together. He's having me open for him on his shows as we go around Australia. So we met up with Milo and his girlfriend, and then me and my mate, the four of us, all jumped in a car. Oh, and one of their other friends as well, actually. Five of us jumped in a car and went up into the Blue Mountains, Katoomba, and just all, you know, drove around there, whatever. Then we did the show. So that was Friday. Yeah. I left on Thursday night and then Friday did the show in Sydney. Saturday I went to Newcastle and did the show there in the evening, like a just the club show. Sunday night we did the tour show, Milo's tour show in Newcastle, and then we jumped in the car and drove on Monday from Newey to Canberra, which was like kind of 5 hours or so, and then did a show in Canberra last night. And then this morning, woke up and drove from Canberra to Bendigo where my cousin lives. And that's about a 6.5 hour drive. And we got into Bendigo to my cousin's place at about 7. But we've seen so much cool stuff, man. I just, this driving, it's so beautiful, especially this time of year. And yeah, the last stop today before we got to Bendigo was about 2.5 hours out of Bendigo. There's a town called Glenrowan, which is where Ned Kelly, the famous Ned Kelly, was finally brought down by the police in 1880, I believe. There was like a siege, you know, the Kelly gang, all the cops came and held him up at the pub, and he ran out with his armor and they shot him like 26 times. Anyway, there's the museum, the Ned Kelly Museum in Glenrowan. So we stopped there and the guys knew a bit about Ned Kelly and I knew a little bit about him as well. And we get there and it's all, the whole town is basically just like a Ned Kelly museum, Ned Kelly theme park land, right? And we get into the official museum and the guy there, he's so psyched. The dude who works there, he fucking loves Ned Kelly. He loves talking about him. He's telling us the stories. And then he's also, though, telling us like, oh, yeah, we've got these cockatoos here. And they're like, one of them's like 80 years old and the other one's 40 years old, which I didn't know cockatoos could live to be super old. First of all, he was very passionate about Ned Kelly. And second of all, he was equally passionate about telling stories of times that these cockatoos have attacked tourists through the cage. He's like, they're smart, you know, they'll stand there like you want to get a selfie with them and they'll wait till you get close and then they'll snatch your earrings through the cage, or like snatch your hair scrunchy, they'll bite you. Wild stuff. But anyway, he's telling us all these stories about Ned Kelly and, you know, he's just really excited, man. Love to see a guy who's excited about telling these stories. And I guess it is a part, I've been trying to think about, like, why is it that Ned Kelly is so revered and, or at least just is a huge part of Australian history? And I guess from what I can tell from the museum today, at that point, so Melbourne was founded in 1835, and that was kind of when Victoria started to open up for the colonial, you know, the English and Europeans and whatever. And so by the 1880s, Melbourne was pretty established and the northeastern part of Victoria was starting to be kind of established as farmland as well. And there were small landholders that were pretty independent. And then there were large landholders. There were people that were starting to get a lot of money and they were favored by the government. And it was seen as very unfair. And there was almost this like class war. And Ned Kelly was someone who, for, you know what? I didn't read. I pulled something up and I'll have to read this tomorrow. There's like a letter that he wrote, the Gerildery letter, written by bushranger Ned Kelly in 1879. Oh, wow. It starts with, "Dear sir, I wish to acquaint you with some of the occurrences of the present, past, and future." Yeah, and it, I mean, it's just like a 3,500 word thing that he wrote that apparently he was supposed to be sent while he was alive, but it actually didn't come to light until 50 years after his death. He wrote it in 1879. I don't know. I don't fully understand the whole Ned Kelly thing, I think is what I'm trying to say. Like, you know, he's an outlaw. He's got a bit of an attitude. He doesn't care about the cops or whatever, but he was, they said he was always very nice to people in the towns. And I mean, they robbed two banks, by the sounds of it, each time for £2,000, which the sign said in today's money is equal to about £2,000, is about $500,000. And I don't know when those signs were written, but it might be even more now. But like, they robbed these banks of a lot of money and then they distributed money into the towns. They like kind of gave it back to the town, so they would, they were like Robin Hood figures. And that's what the guy who was really passionate at the place was saying. Anyway, the other thing about, I mean, it was so cool. There was like, you know, all of this, like all of these items that were used by Kelly or whatever. There was one, he said the most recent addition was a pistol that had had the hammer snapped off. So Kelly, what did they do? That's right. They got to the police station. It was a police pistol. So they came to the police station and then they pretended that there was like, they made noise as if there was like a fight down at the pub. So the police rushed out and then the Kelly gang grabbed them, took them back into the police station, bailed them up, took their guns, the nice guns they kept for themselves, and then their other guns, they snapped the hammers off so that they wouldn't fire. And something that was given to the Ned Kelly Museum 2 years ago was one of these guns with the hammer snapped off. Shit like that. Very cool. There was also a replica house of like the kind of house that the Kelly boys would have grown up in Tasmania. And they had like newspaper for the walls that they would just be constantly replacing. Corrugated iron was really expensive at the time. So the roof of their house was just bark from trees. And then they would have like sheets, like old bed sheets under the roof to stop the bugs and shit that were living in the bark from falling down into their actual house. And every now and then they would just have to put more bark on the roof because it would just disintegrate. Crazy, crazy stuff. But anyway, so that was the exhibit. That was the main part of the museum. Really cool. And then in the gift shop, there were just a bunch of Gollywog dolls. And it's like, what's this? Why is this here? And there definitely was a little bit of a vibe, you know. Like, did I take a photo of it? There was another bit of the town. Oh, I didn't take a photo of it. That was like, maybe it was like an old phone box or something. It was just, but there were, it was like a little sign and it was like, are you wearing your mask? Are you masked up? You better be wearing your mask. But instead of like the COVID masks, it was all pictures of kids wearing their Ned Kelly outfits, you know? And it felt like they were making fun of COVID and wearing masks and stuff, which I don't really care about at all, to be honest. But funny to be like, oh yeah, and the Gollywog dolls. I'm starting to see like a person emerge from these things. I don't know, man. I loved the guy who worked there. He was really sweet. He was really passionate. You could tell he was exactly where he wanted to be. We also, just a lot of stories, dude. We stopped at Gerildery, which, now let's see. I actually forgot. What's the song? Gerildery song. No, Gerildery with an R. Gerildery letter? No. Oh, fuck. No, it's not Gerildery. Fuck. It's... Oh, this is a nightmare. Why can't I remember my things? Niagara Cafe. Oh, yeah. Now, where's that? That's in Gundagai. Gundagai. All right. Gundagai song. Along the road to Gundagai, Slim Dusty. There we go. Now, along the road to Gundagai, let's find out about this song. Because I'd heard of Gundagai before, and I think it might be because of this song. It's an Australian folk song written by Jack O'Hagan in 1922, first recorded by Peter Dawson in 1924. O'Hagan performed his own version later that year, well known among Australians and one of a small number of places which are considered to be Australian, or pieces which are considered to be Australian folk songs. Gundagai is a rural town in New South Wales. Yeah, whatever. Okay. But apparently Slim Dusty is the most famous. Anyway, I don't know. Famous town. We stopped there earlier today as well. And this is a great story. Oh, I think this is a cool story. There's a cafe there called the Niagara Cafe. And it's this old Art Deco cafe that was owned by a Greek family for over 100 years in the town, which already is interesting that a Greek family were there in a small town in country Australia for 100 years in the 20th century. Sorry, Milo was just like, you know how to get on the Wi-Fi. So this Art Deco cafe owned by this Greek family for 100 years, and it's still in the town. It looks so fucking sick. And the thing that it was famous for was because it's like 2 hours away from Canberra. John Curtin, who I knew who John Curtin was. People don't know who John Curtin is. John Curtin was an Australian Prime Minister. And to be honest, I actually didn't know anything else about him. But evidently, he was Prime Minister during World War II, 1942. And one night, Saturday night in Gundagai, here we go, I'll read this news story. Cafe proprietor Jack Castrison was locking up his Niagara Cafe at exactly midnight, as usual. Jack heard a loud banging at the front door and called out, "You're too late, mate," was shut. When the knocking continued, Jack went to tell the would-be customer what he could do with his business. However, as he peered through the glass, Jack recognized the very well-known profile of Prime Minister John Curtin. This put a different aspect on the subject. Instead of hustling off the would-be customer as he had intended, Jack opened the door and said, "Good night, Mr. Curtin." I was just checking the guy's last name, Castrison. Doesn't sound very Greek. Maybe they changed it. Who knows? Who am I? "I'm hungry and I'm freezing," said the Prime Minister. "Can you do anything to help?" "Yes," said Jack. "You'd better come in. I've got some mates with me in the car," said the Prime Minister. The mates turned out to be former Prime Minister Artie Fadden of the United Country Party and future Prime Minister Ben Chifley, who was then Treasurer in Curtin's wartime Labour government. The other member of the group was Senator O'Sullivan, a senior government minister. Since the night was cold, Jack ushered his notable guests into the cafe kitchen where he cooked a hearty meal of steak and eggs. They had been travelling on wartime fundraising missions and were on their way back to Canberra. As Jack got into conversation with the PM, it turned out that his wartime tea ration of 28 pounds of tea a month was hardly enough to keep the cafe going. Curtin nodded to O'Sullivan, who had control of such matters, and very soon after the Niagara Cafe's tea ration was increased to 100 pounds a month. After that, Curtin often called in at the Niagara Cafe for a cup of tea or coffee when he was passing through Gundagai. So too did future Prime Minister Robert Menzies. Isn't that cool? It was a favourite cafe of the Prime Minister of Australia during World War II. And it was just nice. It was very Art Deco. I think I'm going to use that photo for the photo this week. Yeah. I think this episode might just be called Road Trip. Got a photo of Ned Kelly. Got some photos in Katoomba, when we went to Katoomba. Again, just like a great day in Katoomba. We spent the day up in the hills and went again, I've probably mentioned it before, to the Yellow Deli, the cafe, the sandwich place, like owned by a cult. Phenomenal sandwiches. Weird people, always the weirdest people. They have this fucking literature in the cafe. So it's like a cult called, I can't even remember. They're called like the 12 Seven Families or some weird shit. And they have cafes all over the world. Wherever they set up shop, they like have these sandwich cafes. And in the cafe, they have literature that you can pick up and read. And every time I go in there, I'm like, yeah, man, let me read some of this literature. And I pull it out and I read it. And it's just like complete nonsense. It's like garbage. You can't tell what they're saying. Like, I read it and I'm like, I want to be, if anything, I'm probably a pretty vulnerable person. I'd, you know, if you promise me a few things, I'll join your fucking cult, mate. I'll come make sandwiches. I really don't care. I'm ripe for the picking, but their literature is just bad. Maybe I should join the cult. Maybe that's their angle. Maybe they're like, you read it and you're like, it's so bad, I want to help these people. And then you join. And then they're like, oh my God, you're so helpful. thank you for helping us. And then, you know, before you know it, you've got 10 wives and 48 children. And you're like, I just wanted to help these guys out. The sandwiches are phenomenal. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I ate. The trip to Sydney was just so wonderful. I ate some of the best. I just ate like a fucking king the whole time, man. Went out to this Chinese night market after the show on Friday night. And me and a mate just had like all these little finger foods. Like, you go to these stalls and it's just like you're two people. So you're like, I want to get one of that and we can split that. We'll get one of that and one of that. And these like skewers, lamb, chicken, fucking fish. We got rice. It was great. And then in the morning, went to the market in the Rocks and got like a fucking, what did we get? Who cares? It doesn't matter. The point is, it was so nice. Sydney was just wonderful. I have been kind of, I think the last few weeks, you know, I've been feeling like a bit swamped by stuff. And this trip, you know, same thing again. Like, I'm trying to learn Photoshop, right? Oh, and by the way, thank you to the kind person who messaged me last week and was like, hey, you can message me anytime you want about Photoshop stuff and I'll help you out. After listening last week, I really appreciate that. I want to learn Photoshop so I can, like, you know, edit my own posters and shit like that. And so I downloaded Photoshop and, like, I knew I wasn't going to have time to do it before the show on Saturday coming in Adelaide. But even in the car, you know, I've just, like, chucked my laptop on a hotspot off my phone and been watching YouTube videos on how to use Photoshop, like this beginner tutorial from Basics. And it's great, but it is also very much like, why am I in the backseat of a car right now learning to use Photoshop? Like, why do I not have time for this normally? You know, why am I just cramming this in? So I think the last few weeks I have felt a little bit like I mean, I said it a few weeks ago, didn't I? I felt like I hadn't relaxed until I did the podcast. That was like 2 weeks ago. I feel like I'm in a similar spot, but I think this tour and then spending some time in Adelaide is the last of that. And then I'm going to be back in Melbourne. I do have one trip up to Cairns, but that's only slightly for business. I'm doing one gig, but it's more just to go up for the Tottenham Hotspur National meet up in Cairns for the last game of the season and do all of that. Hang out with some Spurs people. That's going to be really nice. And other than that trip in mid-May, I am actually going to fucking, you know what? I want to promise you guys and myself right now, I am not leaving Melbourne. I mean, I'll leave Melbourne. I'll go on like, I'll go for like a week, like a, not a week, I'll go for like a day down the coast to go surfing, you know? But I'm not doing comedy outside of Melbourne until I go to Edinburgh at the end of July. I make that pledge to you guys right now. I'm going to be fucking, if anyone asks me if I want to do any gigs in a state, I'm going to tell them to get fucked. Lose my fucking number. Please don't lose my number. I need those gigs. I need that work. But I just want to chill, man. And I got this 3 months now to hang out in my house, work my job, pay my debt off, work on the show and like plan how that's going to come together. Oh my God, I found a fucking baby grand piano on Facebook Marketplace for $2,000 and it's like wood tone and just, it's so nice. You guys, it's perfect. And I know the show's not for a fucking year. I know. But I'm going to store it at my mate's place, I think. I'm going to check with my piano tuner to see if you can take the legs off. And if you can, I think I'm storing this thing at my mate's place. I mean, I just, it's, I'm also having a meeting with the lady from the gallery that I want, B-side gallery. I'm having a meeting with her next week on Tuesday. And if that comes together and if the price is right, I might be able to lock down a gallery space within the next week. And then we can start talking about how we're going to fill it and what we're going to do. And I have an idea, a vision for exactly how we can do that. And I think it's going to fucking work, man. I looked up church pews today on Facebook Marketplace just to see how much they are. They're really expensive. We're going to need to find a different solution. They're like $300. But, you know, I'm thinking wooden benches as a way to maintain the wood theme but still get a lot of seats in for the show when I do the show in the gallery. I don't know, man. And the last week of shows with Milo, you know, I'm opening for him. I'm doing the piano stuff. It's been good to do long sets of stand-up again and do the gear that I'm working on for the show and just, like, check that it is working. I feel myself constantly wanting to just keep talking. I think I am. I don't know, man. I need some time. I need some time by myself at home to just chill. Last night in Canberra, I did 35 minutes of the show. I didn't quite nail the ending, but I think this morning in the cafe before the other guys woke up, I got the ending sorted. I wrote it down on one page. There are three elements of the ending of the show that need to be kind of stated sequentially for it to make sense and work. And I think I'm pretty close to figuring that out. Yeah, last night doing the 35 minutes, man, it was really great. We needed to do a longer show because there had to be a break so that the bar could sell drinks. So Milo just said, man, how long do you want to do? I was like, can I do 30? He was like, yep. And I did 35 because I'm a dog. But it was really great, you know, and every time I've done it lately, it's been great. And I'm less like when I was doing the Comedy Store in January and it was very negative. I feel like the act is extremely positive now. It's nothing about, like, you know, I'm scared to do this or this makes me angry or whatever. It's all just, hey, this music is great and I love it. And here it is. Check this out. So I'm really excited about the show. I'm really excited about these shows that we've been doing and how well they've been going. And I'm so grateful to my dear friend Milo for taking me on these shows and this tour because it's just been fantastic. We've had so many great audiences. Such a wonderful opportunity to take my friends, you know, around Australia and, like, this stuff with, like, the history, you know, the Ned Kelly shit. And Gundagai, and just, like, man, even today, you know, like, when we were driving into Bendigo and Milo's girlfriend was driving the car and I forgot to say, because it was coming to sunset, I realized when the sun was setting in my head, I was like, fuck, this is the first time she's been driving and she doesn't probably know that there are kangaroos at this time of night and it can be kind of dangerous to drive at nighttime, but I don't want to stop her from driving. But I also don't want to scare her, but I feel like it's my responsibility to let her know that she should look out for kangaroos. And I did. And I could tell that it stressed her out a little bit. But it was also like, I don't know, there was something about, like, you know, I know what it's like to drive in Australia and I know that looking out for kangaroos is something that you have to do, and these guys are British and they don't know that and they're not familiar with that aspect of driving in Australia. And I feel, it makes me feel proud to be like, all the little idiosyncrasies of my country and the place where I'm at that I know because I'm just from here, you know? And these guys don't know, and I just, yeah, even though I could tell it stressed her out that there were kangaroos possibly on the side of the road and that you have to look out for them or else they might jump out and hit the car, I really enjoyed telling her that, like showing her something of my country. God, I'm so much prouder than I ever have been to be Australian and to be from here, you know? It is a goal of mine one day to live in another city and probably another country. But the older I get, the more I realize how much harder that's going to be now than it was when I was 23 and moved to London, you know, because I actually am rooted in the place where I'm from and I give a fuck about it. And that's nice. That doesn't mean I'm not looking forward to living somewhere else. I absolutely am, and I think it will happen. But when I do, it's actually going to mean something rather than just being like, yeah, fucking move to London, blah, who cares? Anyway, look, I don't know what the fuck I've been talking about today, man. I think my head's a little bit all over the place. And I'm not quite sure why. Because I feel really good. I'm here with family and friends. I'm doing comedy. It's going great. I'm working a good job and I'm making money. I have plans for the future. I really could not ask for anything more right now. I'd feel incredibly happy. And maybe that's just something that I would like to recognize today. And you know what? I feel really lucky to have you guys here listen to the pod every week. I feel lucky to have people who message me about the podcast, because it feels like, in a way, by listening, you guys are like looking out for me, you know? It feels like I do this to check in with myself every week. And, you know, you listen and hopefully that means something to you. That me doing this every week, like, gives you, I don't know, I really don't know. I really don't know what it is. Man, watching Milo do his show every night, it's really inspiring and also in a way casts light on how little I am aware of what the fuck I'm trying to say on stage, because his show is so clear and it's funny, you know, and it's a good story and it's a whole thing. It's thematically very consistent and clear, and it just, you can say exactly what it's about. And he literally does say that at the end of the show. And to a lesser extent, my comedy, and to a greater extent, my podcast, I have no idea what the fuck this is about or why anyone would listen to it. My comedy, I think I have some idea. This podcast, I have no idea. And yesterday after the show in Canberra, a couple people were talking to me and they were like, do you have a podcast? I was like, yes, it's insane. And I even kind of, I'm like, I'm happy with that at the moment. Like, now I've given up on the idea of promoting this podcast. And I'm like, look, I do a podcast. I've been doing it every week for 7 years. You probably won't like it. I dare you to try and listen to it. It's nonsense. But anyway, I feel like I'm, you know, whatever you guys get out of this, I hope you get, you know, whatever it is that you get out of it. Not I hope, you must get something out of it, because that's why you listen to it. It's just some kind of comfort or familiarity with me, and you like the way that I speak is what people say, that it's kind of like meditative and relaxing or whatever the fuck. But yeah, I feel lucky to have you guys, because I feel like in a way it's like comforting to know that I can speak every week completely honestly to myself and to you. And I feel like by listening, you're kind of like, I'm like running my own thoughts and mental state past you to check if they're okay, you know? And that's nice. Anyway, I'm going to fucking bed, man. I'm going to wake up early tomorrow morning because the kids have got school and, you know, daycare or whatever. But I want to wake up and hang out with them for like an hour, hour and a half before they have to leave. And that's going to be at 6:30 and it's 10 o'clock right now. So I'm going to put this podcast up and I'm going to go to bed. The podcast this week is called Road Trip. The picture of the podcast is the interior of the Niagara Cafe in Gundagai in country New South Wales. And it's a beautiful interior, nice art deco thing. Great stuff. Thank you guys very much for listening to the podcast this week. This has been Aidan Jones sitting under a tree. Peace.